live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's got podcasts for you 9 days a week. I am Rob's sister, Nina. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast as we are getting ready to talk to PG Law here on the podcast today. Going to call her up on Zoom here in just a moment. So looking forward to that one. Of course, a double episode of Survivor this week. Steven and I got together for the Know-It-Alls on Wednesday night. Tried to process everything from this two-hour episode the other night. And I think we were able to make some sense out of what's going on as we get ready for our finale coming up on Wednesday. We also are going to have another interview this week with Chris Underwood. Be on the lookout for that. And our big end of season feedback show coming up this weekend as well with Mike Bloom taking a break from the B&B to join me on the feedback show. First time that we've done that in a year to get ready. Last time we did it, Mike was a brand new dad and he took some time out to go and talk to me. So we should be ready for another fun one this weekend. So get your feedback questions in robiswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. Not to mention, also, we're going to have This Week in Survivor with Akiva. Also, Rob and Akiva need a podcast, double duty for Akiva this weekend. So we'll also have The Wiggle Room on Monday. So a ton of great stuff coming your way. Before we patch in PG, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at BetterHelp. And what BetterHelp does is they are a great service where you can talk to a online professional counselor about anything that could be bothering you. Now, I mean, not everybody has somebody who's wise like Denise that can tell you to endure or let go. That we don't all have access to that kind of wisdom until now, because so many of us are feeling stuck at home, isolated, and very worried about the state of things. Well, BetterHelp offers online professional counselors who can help. You can talk to a licensed online therapist and find relief. BetterHelp therapists specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, insomnia, family conflicts, and more. You'll connect with a counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential. It's not always easy to talk to the people around you about things that might be bothering you. That's where BetterHelp comes in. You can be talking with a counselor either on video or over the phone or exchanging unlimited messages back and forth as you are talking through the issues that you want to discuss. You can get that professional help when you want it, wherever you are. BetterHelp is also a truly affordable option. Our listeners are going to get 10% off their first month with discount code RHAP. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/RHAP. That's betterhelp.com/RHAP. Talk to a therapist online and get help. All right, everybody. I am very excited to have this guest here to talk about everything that's going on in this two-hour episode of Survivor as we get ready for the finale coming up just 6 days from now. This is such a great guest because she's really become a staple of our podcasting here in the 30s. So excited to have back with us our great friend, PG Law. Yes. PG, how are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited. I get to cover a two-hour episode.
And PG, that this is so rare because I don't think we've ever done a podcast outside of before when you were getting ready to go on Second Chances that you haven't been here in the studio.
I know.
Or in an Airbnb.
That's also true. And like Rob was like, do you want to just do it over the phone? And I was like, I want to do Zoom because I still like to look at your pretty face.
No, we've almost always done video. We didn't do video that time that we were at the Airbnb after the live show from December because probably nobody was looking too hot that day after a late night on the live show in Brea. But we're here. If you're listening to the audio podcast, you know, hopefully we have a video for you to check out on the YouTube channel with the great PG Law. PG, how have you been?
I've been fantastic. Oh, I wanted to show, look, to recreate.
Nice. Rob's podcast mug. I don't have one. I'm like, I have like a Denise coffee mug, which it doesn't say endure.
You're not even.
It is what it is, which I feel like is sort of like not totally dissimilar from endure and let go.
I got coffee. I think this coffee though is more Bailey's than.
Whoa! Oh, you do coffee. Bailey's in the coffee.
Well, at like 2:30 in the afternoon during quarantine, I do.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me tell you, Rob. I like my coffee the way I like my men.
How so? Loaded with alcohol?
Hot, strong, and full of alcohol.
And Irish? Yeah. Okay. There you go. All right. PG.
I already drank too much of this, as you can tell.
Threw me off. You threw me off already. I wasn't expecting that. Anyway, nice to get to talk to you. Let me ask you, Denise talked about how she said, I'm not a tattoo person, never had any tattoos. But now I'm getting not one, but two tattoos. I'm going to get endure and I'm going to get let go. PG, do you have any survivor tattoos?
I surprisingly don't have any tattoos.
Okay. All right. Did you ever think about getting one?
I did. Of course, it's one of these things where it's been a momentous like thing in my life, something that's really colored like a lot of my life since I actually did it. And I've gotten so much from it, the experience, the community, all of that.
Yeah.
I would. So if I ever do get a tattoo, which I might, I would definitely have something from there on it.
Yeah.
I just don't know what yet or where.
I really like where Denise is coming from, because I feel like that when you're on Survivor, especially like when you're in these late stages of the game, it's like, you know what? I've got life completely figured out. It all makes sense. This is, even if the game is confusing, did you feel like you had clarity towards the end of Survivor China in terms of life?
No.
Okay. I feel like a lot of people feel like, oh, yeah, I got this figured out now.
Because
it's like, oh, I'm never going to take anything for granted ever again. Like,
I mean, that part is fine.
Yeah,
that part is totally fine. But what's not fine is kind of like letting it get your head out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, that is just kind of this almost not sour grapes, but a little bit. And yeah. This is not saying that I'm not saying Denise is sour grapes. And I think it's good to keep that balance if you need it for your own sanity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that's totally fine. But in a sense, I also feel like I didn't really need this anyway. I've got a great life at home. And that's cool. I'm sure that's not saying you don't, but that's not why we're out there. And that's not what makes it compelling to watch. I want people who will go through anything to win this. Yeah. That's what I want to
see. So you feel like people that sort of like take away a moral out of like what they've done in the game are sort of like getting distracted from like, no. It's about like what you're doing to grow your bank account, not your mind.
No, taking a moral away from what you're doing, of course, everybody, I think it's safe to say every single person who's played Survivor has learned something about themselves in their lives.
Every single person?
I think so. I think you learn something. It might not be good, but you learn something, even if it's learning that you're a jackass or, you know what I mean? Like, everybody's, I think when you go through as an intense experience as Survivor is, you're going to have some lifetime takeaway from that. Mm.
Yeah.
I learned, for instance, that I used the word like way too much.
You learned. That was your big takeaway. Yeah. Well, I want to say that I kind of like where Denise is coming from, because I feel like that a lot of people like they go through the experience and like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get a tattoo, and they get like a turtle or something like that. Or like they get something like I'm going to get a palm tree, or I'm going to get the Survivor logo. But at least I like that Denise was like, hey, OK, this is I learned something. And then she really did it. She had pictures on Twitter today.
I saw
she really
that.
Did well, get the endure and let go.
It's cool. I mean, I really like that, because it is something that's really meaningful that is tied to the experience, but mm-hmm. not explicitly just a like getting a stamp on a passport book. It mm-hmm. was, you know, something that was a little bit more meaningful to her.
Yeah.
I've actually seen a lot of cool Survivor tattoos from players. Like, I know people that have the latitude and longitude of where they played.
Yeah.
Tattooed on, or maybe like an outline of the map. I know that Todd has Outwit, Outlast, Outplay in Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
As a tattoo.
Yeah. That's cool. But I like something that I could like take away. I don't have any tattoos either, but if I did, I think I would go like Memento style, where that I would get tattoos to remind me of something. Like I would look at tattoos like the same way I would draw on my hand of like, oh, rent is due.
Like the note, like cheat, little cheat sheet.
Yes.
Before you go into Survivor, the answer is always yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I like what Denise did. She's like, oh, this is important. I got to remember it. Okay. Tattoos on my hands. That's what I need to do.
Don't let Tony get to final two. Okay. No. Oh, there it is.
Don't do it. Don't do that. Okay. PG, well, I guess here we are. We're down to five. We'll be back to six after somebody comes back from the edge of extinction. Did you want to talk about Tony?
I mean, how can you not
talk
about Tony like throughout this entire season?
Yeah. Are you a big Tony fan coming into this season? Because, you know, you and I, we got to speak. You came to the live show that we did. The date was March 11th. I was saying to PG right before we came on, you're one of the last people I've seen in person, because shortly after that, within 24, 48 hours from when we had our last live show, the things really came to a halt here. Tony was not a big part of the season at that point. He was a guy with a ladder, basically did not have a ton going on. We were worried about Tony and a potential advantage get-in, maybe if he went to a tribal council because of all the idols that were at his camp. And since then, a couple of weeks from that point, he's really taken off running, sometimes literally and figuratively. And it looks like that there may not be a way to stop him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's either editing that wanted to underplay him like in the beginning on, so it wasn't apparent how dominant, you know, he would be at this point, or if he just was super smart about like the long game, the slow burn, don't come out of the gate super crazy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Lay low, like what was he saying? Like managing your threat level.
Yeah.
Right. Smart made a lot of alliances and, you know, not a ton of enemies raiding. If he did, he built strong enough relationships that he could blindside a couple people and still come out, you know, come sailing out of that fine.
Yeah, it was unusual. It really was weird because that it seemed like, okay, well, we would say like around the merge, like, can you believe Tony is still on this season? Can you believe this? But it seemed like that he acknowledged that about, you know, early on in the beginning of the season, he said, you know, it was killing him to not be out there looking for idols. And it was really, I think, not until like when his wife came, when Baby Cakes came, then he wins the immunity after that and then really came out of his shell. But I think that we've had players that are more hidden in the edit. But it seems like that he really was sort of like trying to have this posture, very Tony-like, of like, okay, I'm going to stay in the spy shack metaphorically and then pop out when there's like 2 weeks left.
Yeah, I think it's super smart. I think he has a really good sense of everyone's relationships now and alliances. And he's somehow part of everyone. Every discussion around votes has been, well, Tony will be one of our numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like Tony's going to vote for us. Like, he's with us 100%. And I feel like I've seen that popping up over and over in all kinds of discussions, which is, that's where you want to be. You want to be that person who's like, oh, Tony's going to vote with us for sure.
Yeah. Were you surprised that last night that Tony's name didn't come up in either of the two votes, where the three votes before that he was immune, but nobody was even talking about voting for Tony?
It's wild. I mean, as a viewer, I would feel like I'm shocked, but, you know, I have seen this play out in my very first season.
Yes.
I was just thinking that when I was watching this last episode in particular, because I related to Michelle so much. Like, I feel like especially where she's at now was so similar to my position in Survivor China at exactly this point in time.
Yeah.
Like, she's just been this underdog who I feel like she has a lot of clarity on what's happening. You know what I mean? But yet no one, she can't seem to get anyone on her side. She's like, Tony's going to win if you let him get to the end. And for some reason, everybody's discounting that. I felt like exactly that, like when I played China, and we had almost a similar thing where it was like Todd and Amanda, this power duo that nobody seemed to want to break up or vote out. And I just couldn't believe it. Like, I didn't understand why. And it's because I think, like Todd and Tony, they're so good at making friends. And for some reason, they're able to feed the exact line to the right people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's like, and this is what Todd would sell to Amanda for why she should keep him around. Oh, well, you know, I've been the face of everything that's doing. So if people are going to blame someone, they're going to blame me. So you're going to come out of this with your hands clean. I'll do all the dirty work for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like Tony is kind of selling that to Sarah a little bit. And it really blew my mind when Michelle said to Sarah, she was like, perception is everything. Sarah knows she's doing a lot. I feel like we as viewers can see that she's doing a lot to drive the game, to help prop up Tony's game. But maybe the other players aren't seeing that as much. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's going to be the same scenario playing out here as in China, where we feel like Sarah has a really, really good chance of winning, but the other players don't see her as driving the game.
Yeah, so much great stuff to unpack from what you're saying. All right, let's start with Michelle. So Michelle is in a similar position to where you were. As you've been through this experience, do you see anything that Michelle could be doing that she hasn't tried yet that you think might be successful for her?
I guess... You know, it seems to me like she was doing kind of what I was doing, which seems like the logical play, which is tell everyone, if you let Tony get to the end, he's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I did. And just for some reason, no one wants to vote him out. And so I guess maybe what I should have done is not go for somebody who's almost untouchable in a way.
Yeah.
She should maybe, you know, like when she went to Sarah and was like, hey, Sarah, like you got to get rid of your boy, Tony, like, you know. And Sarah's like, the minute I feel like she heard Tony's name, she just shut down, wasn't going to be receptive to anything she had to say. So maybe if instead of going for Tony, Michelle had maybe gone for like a Ben or a Denise,
mm-hmm.
that might at least be able to buy her another round into Final Four.
You know, I think it's hard. I feel like that the people that have won from this position are like kind of the people who have like sucked up to the power, where then the person in power ends up like making enemies by like cutting the people that are close to them, kind of like a Danny Boatwright in the way that she was able to win her season. Do you feel like that maybe, you know, in the case of Michelle or your case in China, that like trying to get in closer to whether it's Tony and Sarah or Todd and Amanda, to the point where they're looking at you as a potential, like, oh, we can go with them to the final three, to at least get in there. And then like a Sandra in Heroes versus Villains be sort of the person who's like, hey, like, I didn't do this to you.
I don't think that might be a path for her to final three, but I don't think that anybody in their right mind is going to take an underdog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a power couple to the final three, like, yeah, that's just not going to happen. That she's the one, she is, like she said, public enemy number one. Like, they cannot afford to let her get there, because she is probably, I feel like, one of the only people who would have a decent argument at a final tribal. Mm-hmm. If she's able to, like, she's the only person that would be able to maybe counter how dominant like Tony and Sarah have been at controlling the game. You know, I was the underdog. I didn't have all this alliance, and yet I still made it here. Like, I don't see how Ben or even maybe Denise could have a better argument than either Tony or Sarah for why they should be crowned sole survivor.
Okay.
And I think Tony and Sarah know that.
Let me ask you about the Tony and Sarah of it all, because I feel like that was an interesting way that you explained it, in terms of Tony pitching it to Sarah as, you know, let me do all the dirty work. I'll be the one to get the blood on my hands, where that I'm sure that is what's going on. I don't think that Tony's described it exactly like that on the show. Going back to China, that Amanda felt like that, from what you understand, that was going to be basically her path to victory, that people were going to be mad at Todd.
I think so. I mean, their whole thing was like, the two of us have played such a similar game, you know, so this is a kind of an even, a level playing field. If we take each other to the end, it's such a level playing field that it won't, you know, it's, there's not going to be an alternate storyline for why they should win. So that's part of why they wanted to bring each other. And I definitely think Todd sold it to Amanda a bit like, listen, I'm the bad guy. Everyone knows I'm the bad guy. You look great. Like, you know, and of course that backfired. And especially in a season like this, nobody wants to crown somebody the winner who didn't do anything. You want to have been bested by the best. Mm-hmm. Right. So I, yeah.
You know, I think for Sarah, I think she's especially boxed in by the person coming back from the edge of extinction, where this was an issue like for Jervis and I guess to a lesser degree for Monica in Blood versus Water, where they were playing with Tyson. And I think that they kind of knew, all right, well, we probably can't beat Tyson. At least Jervis did. And there would always be like these offers from the other people like, hey, Jervis, you know, you can't beat Tyson. You know, you can't beat Tyson. But, you know, to go with, you know, Hayden and Sierra at some point, then it's like, well, OK, well, if I vote with you guys and then somebody's coming back from the edge of extinction, that person that comes back from the edge is going to be joining up with you guys. So it doesn't really help me to make the move you want me to make, because I'm still going to be down in the numbers when the person comes back from the edge of extinction.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. So I guess the numbers will be six. Next episode, it'll be six people again.
It'll be back to six. So for Sarah to potentially, you know, make a move against Tony at one of these votes, it's like, okay, well, great. I make a move against Tony, and now somebody comes back from the edge of extinction, and now they're going to vote potentially with Nick and Michelle, or, you know, who and Denise. And now, you know, I'm the obvious target. Now Tony's gone.
That's true. But that's the only, I mean, I kind of feel like that's the only way Sarah's going to win. Mm-hmm. She's got to cut Tony.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
I don't know. So I think it's an interesting question that Sarah feels like that she has relationships with people like Sophie and with Kim. And I think that she feels like that she definitely does have like better relationships with some people that are on the jury, but it's a big jury. I wonder that what I've thought about Sarah, is it possible? Do you feel like that she has the self-destruct code to Tony, where she could get him going in a way that that maybe she feels like that, don't worry, I got Tony in the final three, that I'll wind him up so much that he's going to be spitting out nonsense?
You know, it might be possible. Sarah has been playing a really masterful kind of subtle game, which I don't know why I'm shocked when I see it, like I shouldn't be. But she has proven to be really good at subtly manipulating people. I think feel like Tony is really good with the big manipulations. He likes these big flashy plays. Whereas like in the last episode where Sarah had somehow been able to talk Ben into pretty much suggesting exactly what she wanted him to suggest.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, and like, you know, and her knowing, like her actually saying out loud, I have to let him feel like he's driving the bus. It's like, you know what she's doing? It's like, you ever play Nintendo and you give your little brother the controller, but it's not plugged in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like they think they're playing and you're like, oh, great job. But it's the control, like, you know, so Big is running, like Ben is running around with an unplugged controller, like giving suggestions and all of this stuff. I mean, it was wild for me to see that.
Yeah, that was really, really fun because we got to see Sarah's perspective and then we get to see Ben pitching it back to Tony and Tony's reaction, knowing that it was coming, like, okay, Ben, if you say so, I'll follow you. If this is what you want to do, I think it's a good move. I think it's a good move. So that was really, really fun. Now, we saw Jeremy voted out in the first hour. One of your second chance tribe mates, or castmates. I know you guys never got to play together. Going into Survivor Second Chances, were you scared of Jeremy?
I had you know, Jeremy go out relatively early in his first season?
So he got out probably around like two votes after the merge, probably around like day 25 or something like that.
Jeremy is one of those people who, and I didn't see his first season, but obviously, I mean, look, he looks like a slightly intimidating person. He's just, you know, really fit. He's in shape. He's just this kind of firefighter dude. And I feel like usually I don't get along with these kinds of guys.
Yeah.
Like just in my head, I don't, you know, but he's actually really, really fun and goofy and fun to be around. You know what I mean? And on top of that, I think he's really good at this game and smart and strategic. So, you know, like I said, I had not actually even like was able to, I never even talked to him when I did that season, but after having spent some time with him after, it totally makes sense to me that he is like a threat in every sense of the word. He's a social threat too, on top of physical, strategic, all of that other stuff.
Yeah, he's a big social threat. I didn't have super high hopes for him going into Second Chances because I thought, you know, after coming off of San Juan del Sur, I thought he was a little bit of a hothead. Like, I didn't think that he would, you know, was a 39-day guy on Survivor. I thought that he was going to get into more conflict with people than he ultimately did. This season, it seems like that while he's lasted a long time, that nobody can get him out of their minds, that he's living rent-free in everybody's head, PG, that they all just from the merge basically have been like, got to vote out Jeremy. He's too likable.
Yeah, it's been this weird dichotomy of like, we have to vote him out and he's a big threat, but then people don't, you know, he's so likable, but then like, well, that's not true. I was going to say nobody wants to work with him, which isn't true. He had like a bunch of people actually that were working with him, like Kim and Michelle and other people.
Yeah. Kim to a point. Right.
Yeah. You know, so it's sad to me that he got voted out by like one of who he thought was his closest ally. That was really a hard thing to see also.
By who?
Well, Tony, him and Tony were super tight.
Yeah.
I do want to say, do you think it was a mistake for Tony to own up to being the one that flipped on him at the end of the tribal?
That's actually interesting. So then Jeremy gets up to leave the tribal council and he's like, who did it? Who did it? And Tony is the only one that says, I'm sorry, Jay. I thought that was an interesting decision because everybody else was like, it wasn't me. You know, Nick, who voted for Jeremy, doesn't say anything. Do you think that that's a smart play from Tony to at least be, you know, enough of a stand-up guy to admit that, yeah, I did it. Not unlike, you know, Jay in Millennials versus Gen X. So what do you think of that? Because I feel like then, you know, he's going to find out eventually instead of like that confrontation coming out of Final Tribal Council. Tony can sort of clear the air at Final Tribal Council as opposed to having to now reveal that he was one of the votes.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons to that. Like you're kind of showboating for the jury a little bit. Like, yeah, that was me. Mm-hmm. But he's not showboating.
He was asked a question.
And he was, you know, and he was slightly apologetic about it, which, and I will say this, I think it's good to be apologetic maybe at the time so you don't have to apologize because nobody wants to, I feel like I don't want to hear people really apologize for their moves at Final Tribal. Like I want them to showcase them, you know? So I guess maybe in a sense that would have been a good move because he apologized then. Maybe it assuages how Jeremy feels a little bit. Yeah, it does. I will say this, having been blindsided once, like it does make you feel a lot better hearing an I'm sorry from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's weird how far that kind of goes. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that Tony actually handled that very well. And, you know, Nick, who also was one of the votes, you know, doesn't say anything. You know, it was a weird vote because it was also a vote split. So there were a couple of votes on Michelle also. So there were a couple of people like Sarah did like not technically vote for Jeremy, but she was also part of this plan. So, you know, some people have like some plausible deniability to say that, like, well, I didn't vote for you. I voted for Michelle, but they were all, you know, still part of the group that lied to him about that. Jeremy said also, bad move, dude, to Tony.
Well, that's just, I think that's just him being upset in the heat of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't seem like it was a bad move yet. So far, it seems like it was a good move for Tony.
I think it's a good move for Tony. I think Jeremy was one of the rallying points behind like the opposition.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So he needed to get, I think he needed to get rid of him.
I mean, what about for Nick? Do you think, was it cut and dry that it was a bad move for Nick who ultimately goes out, or are we being too results oriented that he goes out?
100% it's a bad move for Nick. Like that conversation that Michelle had with him was incredible. You know, I was wondering if you had the balls to come talk to me. And she was so sweet about how she did, like how she said it too.
Well, can you talk through that? Okay, so Nick had a decision to make. Okay, he basically could put a vote on Ben and knock Ben out of the game, or he could put a vote on Jeremy and knock Jeremy out of the game. And he said, ultimately, I'm going to make my decision based on day 39, what's going to give me the best chance to win the game. So obviously, he knocks out the person who was the bigger threat to win in the end. But... tell me, why was that the wrong decision, PG?
Well, it's like Michelle was saying. She's like, what other path do you see for us to even get there? You have to get to the end in order to even have a chance at winning. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that taking you need to use Jeremy to help get you to the end, right? Again, like he's a shield for Nick and... Who knows? If Nick knocks out Ben, who's the new Ben? It's Nick.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That's, you know, if you knock out Ben, then you suddenly have, maybe they have no choice but to put you in his place as the final three.
Yeah.
Like he needs to see like, who can I replace?
Right.
Like to leapfrog up into his position.
Yeah. But I mean, for Nick, who is at the bottom, I think that that's a move that, you know, to play from the top is, hey, let me take out Jeremy because when I get to the end, I don't want to be sitting next to him. For Nick, who's at the bottom of the pecking order, that you can't be worried about, you know, who am I going to be able to sit next to in the end? You just need to get there. And then hopefully by the strength of your momentum to get there, you can pull out the win. So where Jeremy very much understands that, you know, Jeremy's thing, he's talked about this season is shields. And ironically, by Nick voting out Jeremy, he got rid of his own shield.
Right. I mean, I think that that was probably, now that I look back, that's probably one of the major mistakes that I made in trying to also, like, I should have been gunning for Courtney instead of, you know, Todd. Denise was like, Denise would have been on board with that because I think, you know, if we're going back to 15, Denise knew also that probably if she takes up Courtney, suddenly maybe Denise is the new Courtney.
Yeah.
You know, and then that way she can get into final three also. So that may have been the way to go. I also just realized that like another parallel, like the fourth place will most likely also be both Denise's.
Oh, this could be the second, fourth place Denise. Survivor history. Yeah. Does Denise have any Survivor tattoos? Denise Martin?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I think she has Lunch Lady on one hand and Custodian on the other. Like those are her two.
Like a little with a sad face.
Can I ask you a quick aside about that? So when that all was revealed with Survivor China, where that, you know, Denise in the real time, you guys were told, you know, she was the lunch lady in the school, and then she had talked about at the finale about how she lost that lunch lady position. Did you guys know any of the details about this in terms of like what was actually going on? Or did that all just like, it was happening in real time for you as well?
It was happening in real time. Like I had seen her once before the finale. Mm-hmm. Like I had a jewelry show, I think in Boston. So she came out, you know, to come see me. And so we chatted and she had told me then that she had gotten fired for her job. And it was sad, you know, like I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, blah, blah. Like So I felt like when the whole controversy came out after the reunion, I felt a little bit also like I had the wool pulled over my eyes. Yeah. And I don't know how much of it is she really believed that that's what was happening to her. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But yeah. Again, it, I don't know. The whole thing just, of course, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And it kind of reminded me a lot of, like, I feel like that's how she was playing the game even. Like, you know, poor me, like this really sucks that I'm in this position that I'm in. And I'm like, you put yourself here. Mm-hmm. Why should I feel sorry for you when you did this to your damn self?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for indulging me on that one. So in the same way that you're saying that, like, well, I wish, you know, maybe we should have been going after Courtney. Maybe we could have sold that to Denise. Does that maybe make sense of why the players who are out there aren't going for Tony? I'm like, okay, well, we're not going to be able to get Tony here. But what if we keep like sort of like taking out people who are sort of, you know, part of his group? Where Sarah, for instance, is on board to get rid of Nick at that second vote last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's still never, I still don't understand the mentality of why you wouldn't want to topple the king directly. Mm-hmm. And you feel like you need to undermine like all of his little lackeys. Like, it is a valid strategy. I just don't really understand why people don't go directly for the king. But I guess it's because I have not really played a game where I have formed that strong of an emotional attachment to somebody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like if I'm like playing with somebody and they're like, he's probably going to win. And I'm looking at him like, yeah, he probably is. I don't know. Like, what do you think it is that makes people want to keep these really strong players around? Is it because they're so good at downplaying that to their alliance? Mm-hmm. Or is it because, you know, in a sense, they are some kind of security for you. Like, I'm here for you. I am here to make sure you get to the end. And I guess people like feeling that kind of security blanket.
Well, I think it's also partially fear. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen this in some of the seasons that Boston Rob has done well also, where I wonder how much that if people are even talking about, like we saw what happened to Kim. She was talking about, let's get rid of Tony. And word got back to Tony. What happened to Kim? She ends up being the person who goes out. So I wonder if there's like a fear of like, hey, if I start talking about going for Tony, somebody's going to tell Tony and he's going to get the vote turned around and it's going to be me.
Why are people telling Tony? Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, Sarah went running back to him the minute her conversation with Michelle was over. Hey, bro, guess what Michelle was trying to do just now? Like, yeah. Why?
Well, last week with Nick, it wasn't that Nick went and told Tony, but Ben might have told Tony. Ben told Tony that Nick, and then, you know, he was able to get Nick to confirm it also by, you know, Tony was asking Nick, like, so you hear my name from anybody? You hear that? Because Ben, I heard that you were sitting there with Kim, and Nick was like, "Hamina, hamina, hamina." So, that he like is really on the lookout, and not to mention like up in the spy nest. You know, he's got all these different ways that he's like he's spying on you. It's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean. It is, and there is definitely like the fear of reprisal from mm-hmm. the Tony contingent. I don't know. Like, I feel like the way I've played has always been consistent. Like I will always want to undermine like the kingpin. You know what I mean? And I will always be receptive to that as well. I'm really surprised now to see how these guys are playing. Like early on in the season, I was saying like one of the reasons why I really, really like this season is because I hate seasons where everyone's just sheep and just letting one person get away with controlling the whole game. And you see that a lot in regular seasons.
And you feel like it's turned into that.
I feel like it's turned into that now a little bit. Like in the beginning, I didn't feel like that. I felt like everybody had their own plans and strategies. And when somebody would try to tell somebody what to do, they're like, you ain't telling me what to do. I'm a winner. You know, I'm a winner. Like I have my own plans. And that was really fun. And I'm starting to feel a little bit that same frustration of like, why is everybody letting this one dude control the whole game?
Yeah. Where with all these people that are left, you feel like there's Tony And then there's Michelle, who's like, hey, I was the one person trying to throw this off. Like, you can't blame me. And people love that person. And then everybody else is just going to, like, get the same question. You know, if there was, like, normal, like, finale press, they potentially are all, the first question is like, why didn't you vote out Tony? Why didn't you stop Tony?
Well, you know, a lot of it is going to be people saying, like, Tony backstabbed a lot of people. Mm-hmm. He made a lot of promises. I mean, in order for him to get to where he is, he had to break a lot of promises to a lot of people, right? Yeah. Like, he had to lie to a lot of people. And so I feel like for a lot of the people that are letting him get there, that's going to be kind of a lot of the reasoning behind it, which, again, is I feel like they're like, oh, well, my hands are clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So... tell me a little bit about the situation that Nick was in at this second vote, where he has the opportunity for the fire tokens or he has to exchange fire tokens to give a punishment to somebody else. How do you think that Nick played that opportunity in the second hour last night?
I mean... I guess it made sense that he played it on Ben. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was a good move. He could have also played it on, I don't know, Tony, I guess, because Tony's been winning challenges.
Yeah.
This season. but it wasn't a, Ben is a good person to play it on, since Ben is also kind of low on the totem pole and he wants him out anyway. Yeah. So that made total sense. And then Michelle won immunity. Can I also say that I feel like the challenges in last night's episode were really heightest? Like,
heightest?
The heightest. They really benefited, like, tall people.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Michelle is tall. She didn't do well on the first challenge.
That's true. But, you know, just throwing something in the air, like, of course, being tall is going to help, mm-hmm. like, having to throw that ball up and
yeah.
up to that ramp.
And then, legs helped in the domino challenge.
Yes. So having to step over those things, yeah, not having to do a giant high step, mm-hmm. you're going to be able to move faster and conserve energy too.
Yeah. Just to go back to Nick and playing the advantage on Ben, or playing the disadvantage on Ben. Yeah, I really think it speaks to that, you know, getting Ben out of the game is like was a good move for Nick, because I feel like Ben or Nick could have replaced Ben as sort of like the person that Tony and Sarah could be sitting next to, where Tony and Sarah were never going to sit next to Jeremy. Like maybe Nick's best chance to win the season would have been going to the end with Tony and Sarah and hoping that people were mad at them and sort of being able to like, okay, maybe they'll split the votes and people like, yeah, I'll be the person and maybe he could win an immunity or two down the stretch and basically say like, hey, like Tony and Sarah, they played a dirty game. I had my back against the wall, and maybe being that person that we were talking about, that like Michelle could potentially be that person where that like they were never going to the end with Jeremy, Tony and Sarah. So that like Tony and Sarah were going to do Nick's dirty work and get rid of Jeremy at some point anyway. Ben was the person blocking Nick's path to the end.
Yeah, you got to provide an alternate option for people who didn't want to be on the Cops R Us train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whoever's bitter, whoever's mad at them, like there's your option C.
Yeah.
Right, vote for me.
Did you like the idea that somebody was allowed to punish someone anonymously? I look to you to, you know, as somebody who's played so many games, such a, you know, a game theory expert, did you like that Nick was able to have that power in the game?
Oh, Matt. Well, I'm hardly a game theory expert, but I do think they're fun. I like that it's anonymous. Because honestly, though, how anonymous is it really going to stay? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And I like that it gives players room to game and scheme. You could spin it any number of ways. You know what I mean? So, like, that's part of the fun. And there was probably 100% a confrontation back at camp that we just weren't privy to. Ben went around and asked everybody. I guarantee
so
you.
In this episode where we had like 20 minutes of fluff at the end of the episode, you feel like there was a confrontation that we didn't see?
Well, not a confrontation, but there's always, you know, like when you get back to camp, who voted for me? Who did this? Like, was it, you know what I mean? Like there's detective work that happens when you get back to camp after anything sneaky is done. But I also like the fact that you don't always necessarily have to say, so somebody could have just said like, oh dude, like I sold something to the Edge and they must've just picked whoever they wanted to play it on. It wasn't me. It was just, I didn't pick you.
Yeah.
You know,
if I had to guess, I bet that it was, you know, that Ben talks to Tony and is like, all right, who did it? And Tony's like, oh, I'm telling you, look, just like the extortion. It came from the Edge of Extinction. I bet it was probably Jeremy. He's got a beef with you. And like, Jeremy. And that was it. Like, I felt like what would have been great is if like that, if Nick could have like somehow got the blame onto Tony, Ben, he's a tricky guy, Tony. You know, this is classic Tony that he would do this to you.
Yeah, but you can't, because I feel like everyone knows Tony doesn't have any more tokens. He spent all of them on the extortion thing.
True.
So
that's
he's
true.
Not a good person.
And Nick, where are all your fire tokens, by the way? I lost them. They're my other pants.
Everybody's got to start like turning out their pockets now and showing how many to
everybody into your pockets. Show me your fire tokens. Yeah. So,
and he picked the right person anyway, because I feel like Nick really didn't care that much and be pissed off Ben.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Did he pick the right person? Because that, I got some questions here from some of our listeners. And I think people want to know, like, should he have ultimately put the punishment on Michelle?
No. Because you didn't, I mean, look, like you look at how dismally she did in the previous challenge. Why would you give her a disadvantage when you already kind of assume she's not going to do that great in this challenge?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so when you play these disadvantages, like, of course it's hindsight to say like, oh, he should have played it on Michelle, but why would he have, why would he do that? You're always going to play the disadvantage on whoever you think is most likely to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seemed like that he was moving in lockstep with Michelle, like at once they got to the final six, but I almost feel like it was too late for that. What do you think? Like, you know, you're in the final six, you've been working with Eric, right? Like, are you guys more incentivized to try to go your own separate ways, or are you more incentivized to try to, you know, pull a third person in with you two?
You have to work together, mm-hmm. I think. At that point, you have to become some kind of package deal. So, and you got to sell your votes together to somebody else. Like, I don't see why that's kind of what I was doing. I was trying to shop me and Eric's votes to like Denise. And I was like, Denise, this is literally three votes. However you want them to go, as long as it's not me and Eric. Like, you suddenly have like so much power. You can dictate where three votes go. Like, that's huge. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'm sure they're doing that. Like, but I feel like you have to like do some collective bargaining here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It gets easier once Michelle ultimately wins the immunity you have to try to work together. Because basically you're the only other option. What about what Denise did? I thought that was actually very interesting, where Denise ends up saying, okay, we don't have that much rice, but we are going to, I'll go all in with my fire tokens and buy rice for the group, because if I'm going to go to the Edge, I want to go in with a full stomach. And at the very least, she's saying that, okay, well, decoy wise, Nick and Michelle will buy it, and then they'll be more unsuspecting because it looks like I'm giving up. But I wonder if I was I would be fearful to make that move of like, is that like too magnanimous of a gesture to be making to the group, where then should Denise be worried about that? People say like, oh, well, Denise is like, that's going to be points for Denise with the jury.
Well, the jury's not there when she's doing it, first of all.
But the people but, that the some of the people that are there are going to be on the jury.
I thought it was, I didn't really see the point of her doing that unless she thought, oh, one of them have an idol, so I want to lull them from not playing it. But also, you're at final six or whatever. If you have an idol, and if you're Michelle or Nick, you're playing that idol. Like, you're you know what I mean? So I don't care if they're like, I don't care if she's totally given up everything. Like, there's no way that somebody isn't going to play an idol if they had had one. Mm-hmm. So I don't see the purpose of her playing like the decoy boot. Like, I feel like it, I don't know. To me, it seemed like she's obviously not. And also, they made a lot of rice for people who don't have a lot of rice left.
Yeah. Like, well, because it was by comparison on The Edge of Extinction, you saw Boss Rock, like, this is all the rice we get.
It's like a thimble.
I watched these episodes so many times that last week, Tony was eating like a baseball helmet full of rice at one point in the episode. I'm like, how much rice do they have? This is crazy.
The pot was full to the brim.
Yeah.
That's more rice than I make at home.
I mean, Tony was eating so much rice Tony was eating like a bowl of rice that was bigger than you would make at your house.
Yeah, it was wild.
What's going on there?
You know, and it was bizarre that they also, like, before that, she was like, we decided not to make any rice today, which is, I don't know about you, but when have you ever not come back from like a challenge and didn't want to eat,
mm-hmm.
like before going out to tribal or whatever? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe, I mean, had Denise been talking about this of like, all right, I'll buy rice for the group in a little bit. You know, let's go through what we have and then I'll buy some more when the window's closing.
Well, but also, did she hand, I don't remember, but did she like hand out her fire tokens then and there?
I don't know. I don't know how they did it.
Because I was kind of thinking, like, she was like, oh, well, if I go, then I'll give you the fire tokens. I'm thinking, this bitch got to eat rice and keep her fire tokens. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know exactly, how that all worked. Let me ask you this question from one of our listeners, Tori Steele. Can you work through Denise's game and her alliances? We've seen glimpses of her being tight with Adam and Jeremy, but she voted them out. How did she end up with Sarah and Tony? Her story is the least clear to me going into the finale. Okay, could we talk through Denise a little bit?
Well, I would love to, because I am as mystified as this caller, because, it's really a shame. I had really... You know, I thought Denise was one of my winner picks going in. I thought she had really good chances. She seemed really well-rounded, and she's still in it, you know, as far as like, so she has made it very far.
Mm-hmm.
But she hasn't done a lot, and it hasn't even been really, I feel like it hasn't been clear which group that she's even in. Like, I thought she was on the outside of the alliance, and suddenly she's on the inside, or like, I'm just as confused as you are.
Yeah. Denise, you know, did play like a quiet game post merge in Survivor Philippines, where, you know, she sort of like she moved with Malcolm, but she doesn't seem to have like a key ally in this game. It seems like that she's been like more of a loner in this post merge.
Yeah, you know, I don't get why the loners don't end up banding together. It's weird.
In fairness, she did, you know, have the conversation last week with Nick and Michelle, like, hey, why don't we go with this final three? But I think that Denise was like quick to realize that was a sinking ship and she doesn't have a lot of options there. You know, her and Ben are the only people from, and Michelle, they're from the original Cele, but it seems like that they never, or they haven't all been working together for some time. Like Ben has been completely with Tony and Sarah for some time. So it just doesn't seem like that she has anywhere to go, but she's like offering herself up of like, hey, I'll be a pawn if you want me to.
I think Denise and Ben have a better relationship probably than maybe we're really seeing or remembering.
Mm-hmm.
They were together from early on. And I feel like I faintly recall some conversation that somebody had where their names were also linked together. Like, mm-hmm. there's no way she's not going to vote with Ben or what, you know, it was something like that.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's clear, at least even to the people out there, that they are kind of in partnership, but maybe it's just not really panning out, which is why we're not really seeing more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. It's a weird thing that she's got this really, I mean, because it's like, yeah, it's good that you're friends with Ben, but I don't know how much this alliance is really going to benefit you, because you're getting cut at four. Like, you know, it's yeah. Mind boggling that they don't see that.
Do you think there's any chance that the Edge of Extinction person comes back and could vote with Michelle and Ben and Denise? Why wouldn't Michelle and Ben and Denise vote with the Edge of Extinction person?
That's true.
Against Tony, or now maybe Sarah wins immunity and Tony plays his idol, and then okay, now you have to make a decision. But if they don't win immunity, why wouldn't those people band together?
I mean, I feel like they should, but I also feel like inherently maybe there might be some kind of desire to be like, you know what, we all earned this because we haven't been voted out yet.
Yeah.
So not like you don't deserve to be here because you've already been voted out, but that might be some kind of subconscious thing.
So, you know, I'd be surprised if it was that, but I do feel like that, you know, there will be the thought of like Tony, like really pushing on people like, hey, guys, remember what happened with the last Edge of Extinction? They got to the end and nobody could beat them. They're the biggest threat. So Tony could be spinning it, and Sarah too, that like this Edge of Extinction person is the biggest threat to win the game.
I mean, that's what Tony's best at, is spinning how much of a threat other people are.
Yeah. And if like, you know, if you're Michelle and Ben and Denise and you want to vote together, you still have one more vote to take out either Tony or Sarah and then potentially knock them out before you get to the final fire.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's such a wild, you know, I feel like it's just such a wild card of who's going to come back from the edge and what ties in relationship. Well, okay. Like, of course I want Natalie to come back.
Natalie,
like,
why?
Well, just she's been a beast out there. Like, mm-hmm.
But you don't know you her know. From real life, or do you?
No, I've not met her in person,
mm-hmm.
but just from seeing her on Edge, how much she's kept her head in the game, continually like killed all of the challenges that they had out there. I find it super impressive. I feel like she's definitely kind of underdog, but really making the best of the situation she's in.
Could you have done that, PG, if in Second Chances they had Edge of Extinction and then, okay, so you get voted out. Would you have been able to go to the edge and live there for however many days?
100%. Of course. Like, I mean, I would have probably been more like Adam Klein in these challenges. Yeah. Like, oh man, I'm so out of shape. How are they doing this? Like,
how did you do that? Yeah.
I like the outdoor survival part of it. I love those. I couldn't imagine anything better than to be stuck on an island with a bunch of survivors.
Wow.
Sitting around the fire. You don't have to really do a lot of gameplay. You can just sit and chat and kind of do this whole like adventure survival thing. But I think
you want to go to the Edge of Extinction.
I would.
Yeah.
I want vacations like that in my 20s, Rob. Like, I paid money to do that kind of stuff.
So you paid money to go sit on an island. I want to know more about this. So what do you do?
Well, it wasn't like... in my 20s, I went on this big backpacking trip through Southeast Asia.
Yes.
And I ended up on a small island off the coast of Malaysia. Mm-hmm. I started scuba diving.
And you lost your passport.
I did not lose my passport.
Oh, what did you lose?
Lost my mind. I just wanted to stay on the island, and it was totally full. And I met this girl that was like, you know, she was Swedish, and she was like, "Hey, I have this place that there's two beds in this little hut." She's like, "I sleep on a hammock outside." She's like, "There's no electricity and there's no running water, but she's like, you guys are welcome to come stay if you want." And there was nowhere else to stay, and I was like, "Sure." So that's what I did for 2 weeks. Like, you know, I'd have to sneak into like some other resorts to kind of shower, but that was maybe like every couple of days, mm-hmm. if that. I spent all of my money, whatever money I had, I just put it towards diving and just
diving.
You know, yeah, like scuba diving.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, obviously, this is not on a beach with like a handful of rice, but mm-hmm. you know, I like that kind of roughing it. Like, and I enjoyed my times on Survivor when you had to like the survive. Like, I like the survival part of it. I think it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Edge is brutal, and it's not, you know, a holiday by any means, but there is, I think it's a special experience.
Yeah. Okay. PJ, I didn't really know that about you, that you really just love the survival element so much.
Yeah. Like, even in China, I was like Jungle Queen. Like, I really liked all that, making the fire, collecting the firewood, being self-sufficient, like just knowing that you are somehow staying alive mostly through the efforts of like your own two hands. There's something yeah. immensely satisfying about that.
Other than the weather, I don't really mind it, but I wouldn't say I like it.
There is something really visceral
mm-hmm.
about it, about like you made it through another night. You kept yourself alive with food that you gathered with your own hands. And like, even in Cambodia, like I did a lot of the food gathering. I did, you know, like did a lot of fire building. Like, I like creating, I like making stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Makes sense. Okay. We talked about Denise. Talk to me about Michelle. John Rumsey says, what's the best strategy for somebody like Michelle to use the Edge of Extinction player to win? Does she have a path, or does she need to win out?
Absolutely. She needs to 100% recruit the Edge person and immediately pull them aside. Just be like, hey man, look, like I'm a loose ship here. They're together. They're mm-hmm. tight. Like, you don't, you know, you've just come back from this thing. You're probably not tight with all of these people that are here, since they've had X many days together separately. She's like, I don't have anyone. I'm pretty much you. I'm in the same boat as you. We should stick together. And on top of that, they will probably want to vote you out, you know, whatever reason. Like, immediately she needs to join up with them. I feel like that's probably one of the only ways she'll be able to get back in.
Yeah. You know, I do feel like that the Edge of Extinction person could be some sort of like a shield for Michelle also, who would be like the likely next person to go home, where somebody comes back from the Edge of Extinction, potentially somebody with an idol. While Michelle could end up being the target if they can't get the Edge of Extinction person, like if Michelle can potentially like maybe either win an immunity here or maybe be part of a different plan, you know, she could get through a couple of votes because of the Edge of Extinction person.
That's true. And whoever comes back is likely to be one of those people that also have an idol too.
Yeah.
I feel like, who had advantages or had, who, can we talk about who has idols?
Yeah, Ben and Tony have them in the regular game, and then Natalie, Tyson, and Rob have them on the Edge.
Okay. Wow, that is a lot of, well, I guess technically there would be three idols.
Only one is going to get in.
Yeah. So I mean, three total.
Yeah.
Ben and Tony's. Are you talking Ben and Tony each have one?
Ben and Tony each have one, right.
Yeah, so then that's still a lot of idols for this
three
late in the
idols
game.
And then immunity, so four people could be immune at the next tribal council, but it's not enough to replicate the advantage get-in, which Sarah once had a firsthand view of when Suri got knocked out.
Yeah, that was brutal. That was brutal. I remember still they had to do a whole diagram. Like, I feel like Jeff had to do a whole diagram of who played what on who and like mm-hmm. how it all went down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that could end up being a really crazy scenario in terms of the Edge of Extinction person coming back into the game. Tell me a little bit more about Todd. I got a lot of Todd questions for you. Okay. Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. wants to know, how would Todd have done if he were on this season? Josh Green wants to know, would Todd have been able to adapt to the new school game?
I think he would have done really well. Todd is really good. He's really likable.
Yes.
And he has an ego, but he knows when to put it aside, you know? But he's very confident. And I feel like that's what people are drawn to that also. I was chatting with him out there and he was talking about, I was like, well, do you think he would have aligned with the old schoolers? I was like, wouldn't you have been worried that, you know, all the old schoolers are the ones being voted out? And he's like, of course I would have aligned with old schoolers. And he's like, if I was there, they wouldn't have been voted out. And I was like, oh, against the bold, bold words.
Yeah.
From Todd, you know, but I think that not having that ego is really important in a season like this, where it's all big egos. They're all winners. Everybody wants to think they're the best. So if you're able to put that aside and, you know, let people think that you're their number, you're their little soldier, at least for a little while, that'll get somebody like Todd pretty far in the game, you know?
I wonder, you know, how Todd would have done. Because I think he would have basically, like, I think he would take the Adam spot, right? Like, I feel like that one of the reasons, you know, that they don't have Todd, like, I feel like Adam sort of, like, took that, is that fair to say?
I think Adam or, like, Nick were both fairly similar archetypes to somebody like Todd.
Yeah.
And maybe they were just from more recent seasons, I guess.
But I wonder, even, like, the old school players, like, do you think, like, Boston Rob is going to work with Todd or anything like that? Even though he's technically an old school player.
Yeah, I think Todd would have done fairly well. Like, you know, he has a lot of good relationships with a lot of the people out there. I think that's one of the things that comes from being a old school winner, is you've just been around for longer. So you've had more time to kind of get to know these people.
Yeah.
You know, and plus he's still in the scene quite a bit. Like, he's still a big fan.
Yeah, and I know he has really good connections with people. I just wonder, like, in the same way we were talking about, like, that Tony was able to, like, take his foot off the gas, do you think that Todd would be able to, you know, if he gets back out there, to not play that hard, to where people wouldn't be targeting him early on?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Todd always kind of knew about having shields. Like, I remember that was his big strategy in China, where he was like, I'm going to get somebody big and strong to deflect this meat shield.
Yeah.
But he knows his weakness. He's like, I'm also going to have somebody who's smaller and weaker than me too, and I'm going to keep them around. That way he's shielded on both sides, you know? So I think there were enough people for him to work with out there to have tried to pull something like that together, although I don't know who would have been smaller and weaker than him on this season.
Yeah, but that is a good point of, you know, with people like Aaron and you know, that sort of idea, you know, keeping Jean Robert around in the game. So, you know, Todd was ahead of his time with that sort of thinking.
Yeah.
This is from John Ottaviano, who says that, PG, I had the pleasure of spending Eliza's fundraiser in the room with you and Todd, and you were both amazing. I confess I hadn't seen your season, but after meeting you two, I can't wait to dive in. Thank you both for being so generous and patient with all of us. Todd seems to be a one-of-a-kind person and one of the original superfan winners, a la Adam Klein. How might Todd have fared this season, and do you think his game might have changed all these years later? Do you think that with age, Todd's game would be much different?
That is such a weird thing to ask, because whenever I talk to Todd, it feels like just yesterday that we played. I don't know that either one of us have changed a ton from, you know, from back then. It's not like either one of us are, like, married with kids or whatever. To me, he still seems like very much the same kid who played all those years ago. A little bit cocky, but in a really fun way, really friendly, good at making friends. But yeah, I don't know that he would have needed to change the gameplay that much. It's not like, I mean, last time I think he won just by strategy and mostly by being social. I think he got a bit lucky, like, you know, getting into like the end game where he was, and then he was really able to solidify from there.
Yeah. This is a question from Kayla, who says, were you sure you were voting for Todd?
prior to the final tribal council, or was his fantastic performance there what sealed it? You mentioned that you always aim for Todd because you knew how great of a game he was playing. So did you know going in that you would cast your vote for him?
I would say going into final tribal and all through the game, I always told myself, I was like, if Todd gets to the end, he's going to win 100%. I'm going to vote for him 100%.
Mm-hmm. Did you mean that as a threat?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. Like, he's a threat to win. And also, but by that same virtue, how can I not vote for him?
Mm-hmm.
If I think he was playing such a good game, you know what I mean? And if I'm a person that values good gameplay, like, how could I not vote for him?
Yeah. But some people do the temper tantrum of like, that's it. All right. If you vote me out, I'm voting for this person then.
Yeah. But Todd never made promises to me that he didn't keep.
Mm-hmm.
He was totally like, you know, he was totally honest with me from the minute we met and talked out on the island. And he was like, I like you. But you already know I have my alliance, but I will help you get as far as you can, you know, until that starts to conflict with me and my alliance. And of course, how much he means it or not, like, it doesn't matter. It's still something really nice that people want to hear. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I never had hard feelings against him for voting me out, because he had told me from the get-go, he's like, I will have to vote you out at some point eventually.
Yeah.
You know, I think that goes a long way towards the bitter feelings, because nobody likes feeling like they were fooled.
Mm-hmm.
They were bested is fine. Feeling like you were bested by a worthy opponent is one thing, but feeling like you were fooled by your friends is another,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that's why, like, Denise ultimately voted against him to win, because she felt betrayed by him, you know?
Yeah. PG, is that important to foster with people? Because, you know, you want to build trust throughout the whole season where, you know, if you are playing with people, you want them to feel good about what you're doing. But, you know, how do you ride that line in terms of, you know, like, hey, like, you know, we're working together, but, you know, this may not be, you know, like a, you know, a blood pack to go to the end. Can you do that?
We had that conversation with Tony, with Cops R Us, where they were talking about, you know, their friendship, their alliance through the years, and like, how are we get to the end? And I think that Tony said something really, really smart to Sarah when he said, he goes, you're the only one I would be okay with beating me.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I don't want anyone else here to beat me but you. You know, and I feel like he's doing the same thing to her that he really did to Wu. Like, hyping him up. Hey man, don't you want to go to the end with a worthy opponent? Like, Wu to this day, like, I'm in Cambodia, Wu told me his number one regret in life is taking Tony to the end. And I'm like, why did you do it? Didn't you see that he was going to win? He's like, man, like, you know, you get hyped about, he knows how to play to these people. He knows what will work on them. And with Wu, it was like about honor. Don't you want to go to the end with this honorable opponent, play an honorable game? That'll be what you say to the jury. You know, and
because
of course,
that's what you say in your Taekwondo study.
Yeah, people like hearing that. They're like, oh, this guy really knows me. He knows I'm an honorable dude. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, people like to feel like they're seen. Mm-hmm. He's saying the same thing to Sarah. He's really like, Tony is good at this buttering people up. So it's, you know, and I couldn't believe this, that he goes, hey man, I'm going to have to vote you out. Like, huh, you know, and they both, and it's a weird thing, is they both laugh. And I'm like, only Tony could say something like that to somebody's face.
I'm going to blindside you now, man. Yeah. it's interesting because they've had this, such this extensive shared history over the course of their seasons, where they were even talking about how that he had to betray her in the first season, but then she won the second season, and that this is now they've always been together 6 years. So they do have this amazing shared history between the two of them.
Yeah. It's tough. You know, I played this game recently. That is a little bit like, I guess, Dominion, where basically, like, you're different countries, you have to bomb each other, right? And I was on one side and my friends were on the other side. So I was like, hey, you guys, well, obviously we're friends. Let's align together and we'll bomb all these different countries together secretly. It's very similar to Survivor.
Yes.
And I had other people on my team and they're like, you know, we just worked with that team, your friends. They're like, we should bomb them now right away. They won't think it's us because you don't know who bombed who.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, they're what we can't do that. And these guys were bobbing me behind my back like the whole time. I was so,
they took advantage.
I was so hurt. Like,
yeah.
it's a brutal, like, it is a brutal thing. Like, and also knowing when is the time to break off and do that, you know?
Yeah. It's a great question. Do you have the answer?
She needs, like, I mean, here's the thing. They need to get each other. She needs to get him before he gets her.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's about, you want to be the first one to do it, but you don't want to jump the gun.
Yeah. Prisoner's dilemma.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, now might be a good time for her to turn on him, because he probably could have expected her to turn on him after the Sophie vote out when she was so mad at him.
Yeah.
And then she didn't. So maybe now he's like, okay, we're past that. So now he's, again, lulled into the confidence. So it might be the good time for her to make the move.
Yeah. Really, best case scenario for Sarah might be to... Tony has to play his idol, because like the Edge of Extinction could be what ultimately helps Sarah here, because when the Edge of Extinction person comes back, Tony might need to play his idol at that final six tribal council, and then he could potentially be vulnerable at the final five. Like, that could be the only time that Sarah has to be able to get the jump on Tony.
That's true, and plus he's been doing pretty good at challenges this season too.
And really, if he stands there in the final tribal council, Sarah, how could you vote against me? We had a thing. She's like, you know, Tony, that you played the best game. How could I beat you? I had to vote you out. Like he's not going to give his vote to Sarah.
He's going to vote for her. If she votes him out, I think he would still vote. They would still vote for her.
He would vote for her. Like, come on, Tony.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is a question. You mentioned Wu from Felipe Shimon. In an alternate universe, how would your ally Wu have done on this season?
I think Wu is one of those people that can do very well and get very far, and I don't know that he's the type of guy that can win. I love Wu. I don't know that he ever came off as being 100% driving the bus, and I feel like you want to vote for whoever's driving this madhouse. You know what I mean? He's a really good lieutenant, and he will carry out whatever you have to say. And I saw even, you know, there was quite a bit of that even out there where he was like, Peach, tell me what to do. Who should we vote for? Like, you know, and I was like, I think you need to go follow Savage, because I think he's looking for an idol. He's like, okay. And he'll like go, you know, like, and he like scurried off and would like follow him and stuff. And I think somebody who plays that way, like the way he does, will get very, very far. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, everybody wants to keep that person around.
I think he would go very far in this season if he was there, because I think that people would have kept him around.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Wu is also not necessarily, I don't think he's a big schemer. He is that pretty straightforward. He's actually very old school, mm-hmm. the way he plays. You know, that's why even in like our season, in Cambodia,
he was a shelter person.
A shelter person, right away, off the bat, mm-hmm. totally gets along with people like Dietz, with, you know, with like Kelly Wigglesworth. Works hard, puts in his time at the shelter. You know, like, he doesn't like the people who talk too much, like schemes too much. Like, that's not really his thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. Okay, let's go back to Sarah. Humby has a question. Was Sarah counting on Sophie to take out Tony, and that's why she's so mad? Do you think that Sarah intended to always have somebody else do the dirty work and take out Tony?
It's possible. I think also that she knew Sophie was a Sarah number and not a Tony number.
Yeah.
And now Tony's been taking out Sarah's allies, and Sarah hasn't really done too much in the way of taking out Tony allies, has she?
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Only Nick.
Yeah, I mean...
And Tony
was
on board with it.
He had a lot... Tony had a lot more people in his pocket than she did. She had one solid person, and that was really Sophie. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's very smart Tony to take her out.
Yes. PG,
Can you tell me that in your mind, who do you think the final three is going to be?
I mean, it's shaping up to be Tony, Sarah, and Ben. I think it's likely to be Ben.
I would have said that I thought it was Tony, Sarah, and Nick going into last night.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know,
I thought Nick had the zero vote finalist thing going on, but no, it does not look like that's good unless he gets back in.
I feel like both Ben and Nick have kind of been getting that edit mm-hmm. a bit. You know, you could especially see like with Ben's confessional of, well, I haven't gotten any advantages. I've only been getting disadvantages played against me. I can see I don't really have a lot of friends out here. Like, that's the person you want to take to third. You know, that's the person you want sitting next to you at Final Tribal.
Mm-hmm. So you think that that's the three? Tony, Sarah, and Ben.
I think so. I don't see how Ben would get votes if he's sitting up. I mean, if I was Tony and Sarah, that's who I would take.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me ask you a question. This is from Justin. Justin wants to know, as the mayor of people screwed by two tribes to three tribes in the swap, do you think that Boston Rob, Parvati, Sandra, and Yule would have had a real shot to win if they didn't get swapped into a tribe with fewer people? PG, can you talk about that, about going from two tribes to three tribes?
It sucks, first of all.
You know what? Honestly, I really don't like it. You know, at the time that it happened to you, it was one of the first seasons that I think that they had done that. They had a lot of three tribe seasons, but I'm trying to think if they had done two tribes to go to three tribes yet on the show. I think they had started with three and gone to two. I think that was the first time that they did that, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that it is super unfair for whoever ends up on the tribe that has to start a new camp.
Mm-hmm.
That expends an enormous amount of energy.
Yeah.
And also the food situation is not, you know, well, especially like in Cambodia, we had a marooning. So like there was a ton of fruit, chickens, rice at both, you know, at the different camps. And then to be the third camp that doesn't have any of that, I think it's a really unfair playing field, and I don't think it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really difficult thing to get past. Cause just, a little bit of food goes a long way. Mm-hmm. Especially in the early games when the challenges are really strenuous. That said, I do think that there is potential for anybody to turn a numbers disadvantage around, as you saw in the anchor tribe with how Savage and Tasha were able to flip the vote on me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it sucks for me, but props to them. And that just goes to show it's doable. I mean, it also happened, I think, because it was like the worst possible tribe combination I could have found myself in. But it's there. Like, and a smart player knows how to exploit that.
Yeah. It's just that it doesn't give people any options. As somebody who's been voted out of a small tribe myself, of starting with six, which is much more fair than to have the situation than what happened to you. It's just like if there's a couple of people that are working together, there's really nothing else you can do.
Yeah.
Whereas if there's 10 or even 8, these two people are together, but there's some options here for us. We can try to figure something else out.
Yes, I do think it's, I don't know, I do think that with those numbers, like I said, anything can really happen. Like, even with, like, you know, that tribe that was Parvati and Michelle and Wendell.
Yeah.
Like, it really seemed hopeless for those two girls. And somehow they got them to vote Yule out, you know, like early on. So.
But I think that was more on the strength of that, Michelle and Wendell had a pre-existing connection that ultimately was the motivation there, as opposed to where I don't, in fairness to Michelle, I don't think that it was really that this was some sort of a, I mean, unless you want to read into that Michelle got Wendell on tilt to the point where then Wendell was misspoke at tribal council, which concerned Yule to the point that he had a conversation with Wendell that ultimately made Wendell say, hey, we got to vote out Yule. I think it was much more that there was a comfort level with Michelle and Wendell that they were going to stick together, and Nick just got on board with that as opposed to what, you know, anything that happened game wise.
I think that's true, but that's what I, but I will, but that's still part of this game. People go, everybody came into this with, you know, pre-existing relationships. So even if you go into these new tribes down in numbers, you can find something to work,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, like I said, when I got voted out of Cambodia, like we were 4-2 and that somehow got flipped on me. So anything's possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. PG, tell me then, Stan McCutcheon says that both of your seasons were in such incredible and unique locations, and your second was the last to be shot before Fiji became the permanent, quote-unquote, home of the show. How would you feel about Survivor going back to filming in different locations?
I would love that. I was actually just thinking yesterday, I was talking with some people, and I was like, these locations are, every show is shot at the exact same location. What's to stop me from flying out a month, 2 weeks before my season and just bury like caches of supplies all over Fiji? Like, I'm just going to wrap food bars or whatever, like emergency little rations, and just, I'm just going to bury them all over Fiji. And well, I'm going to get out there and suddenly I'll have like all these little like secret squirrel holes of acorns that I can dig up and snack on. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess you could do that. I mean, from what I understand, I think they mix up the islands to some degree, but I think there's like a bunch that they keep recycling.
They do, because I feel like, haven't we seen where like players are like, yep, here's the tree with the notches from the previous games.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I'm just saying it's possible. Yeah. Just to create squirrel holes everywhere.
PG, do you have any thoughts on that, you know, if Survivor has been renewed for season 41, but obviously we don't know when the show is going to be able to get back to filming, let alone get back to filming in Fiji. Have you given any thoughts to any way that Survivor might be able to film a season anytime soon?
How, like what, like if they had to do it over Zoom?
Yeah, well, I don't think they could do it over Zoom.
Look at me, I'm on Survivor right now.
We were talking about last night about, you know, could they film a season of Survivor domestically? Do you think that that is a possibility for the show at some point in the next few months? Or would that not work? Does Survivor need to be an exotic location? Like I'm not talking about like a park somewhere, but, you know, hypothetically, if they were going to, you know, get a couple of acres on a ranch somewhere.
Yeah, I guess that could work. It's just about them forming some kind of little microcosm of society. That's really the interest. And I think it could work, even if they're in, like, I don't know, Yosemite or something like that. Like,
I think that you could build a theme around it. It would be some sort of like a Western motif, and have it be, you know, like frontier season, like you know, Survivor, like, Wild Wild West. Like, I think that people would be very into it.
Is that like Kid Nation? Like, yeah, I'll just it would be like Kid Nation ranch.
Yeah, go to the place where they shot Kid Nation. Look, I mean, Pearl Islands is pirates. I mean, that's just as hokey.
True. We could have like cowboys and Indians. I feel like that's very on brand for Survivor.
That's probably, I think we should like stick with cowboys versus cowboys. Good cowboys and bad cowboys. I think we should. Oh, cowboys and cowgirls. I think, because I thought about, well, maybe we could do like a Native American type. Like, I said, you know what? Let's not even. We'll only screw that up.
Well, didn't they already try that with Pirate Master? Wasn't that kind of the experiment of being able to do like a spit, like a Survivor spinoff?
Sure. I guess you'd have to ask Russell Hands. I don't know a lot about Pirate Master.
I don't really. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Look, if they're limited in their options to being able to travel, and if we want to just see them keep it going, I would be okay with them moving here. Because I guess, you know, ultimately it is less about the location, and now it's just more about the game strategy, the gameplay. Like, although at some point, where does it keep shrinking, and then all of a sudden it's Big Brother? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. PG, let's see. What about the 50-50 idol? Okay. Michael Butler Ridge Jr. says, can we improve the 50-50 idol?
I liked how it's like just like this pure luck or like gambling. Are we going to have like Survivor slot machine next?
Yes. The slot machine idol. First off, do you have any issue with Michelle's toss of the 50-50 coin? Should that have been a legal toss?
Did she just kind of like...
She just kind of like turned it over.
Did it rotate? Did it flip?
By my untrained eye, I would say it was probably about a 540-degree turn.
You can just do this.
We got a full 720. I think we got 360 and a half.
I saw that where he goes, when Jeff goes, you have to throw it so that it lands here on this like postage size stamp podium. I was like, how is she going to be able to get a good flip and have it still land right there? So, and it's like,
you feel like that it was Survivor sort of like boxed her in by, it has to land on the desk, so you can't throw it that high.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't. How high is she going to throw up high? It's going to, like, I don't know, land in the fire or something. Like, but you know, or maybe they should have just had him throw. I don't know. Like, yeah, but it didn't even matter anyway because it was totally. She didn't even have to use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I say also my favorite part of that was Jeremy's face the whole time?
Yeah.
And he's just like.
Yeah. he basically, can you play it on me? Can you play it on me? Please. I guess the question that we got from Graham from the Bay, how big of a mistake was it for Jeremy to give the 50-50 coin back to Michelle?
As opposed to what, keeping it for himself or playing it?
Did Jeremy misplay it at the last tribal council where it seemed like that Michelle was mad at Jeremy at the start of this episode where she was like, hey, Jeremy, thanks for nothing. Now everybody knows about my coin and he gave it back to her. It seemed like that she was mad. I wasn't sure exactly what the reason why she was mad.
So I missed the last half of last week's episode, so I didn't get to see what went down. So...
I don't know. Wait, it didn't seem like anything went down with the coin other than Jeremy didn't play it, but she seemed mad at him to start this episode.
So, so did she like come out and say like, I have this advantage. I want to play it on Jeremy.
No, she gave it to him and then he told Tony he had something and then he was debating whether or not he should play it. And he's like, should I play it? And then he didn't end up playing it, but then he gave it back to her.
And like his explanation to her for why he didn't play it was like, I didn't want to be known for having saved myself with your advantage. Mm-hmm. Didn't he say something like that?
Something like that. Yeah. He said, I don't want to use it. I don't want to be saved by a coin. Yeah, not bad to be saved by a coin.
Well, it was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it saved you. It's fine. And there's always a way to spin it. If people were like, that wasn't yours. Guess what? I made this relationship.
Michelle's the master of spinning it. 540 degrees. Boom.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I made this relationship with this person. I got them to play an advantage on me. Like, I did that. Yeah. That's his thing, you know?
Yeah, it's fun.
That was weird. I didn't really, I don't understand why you wouldn't play it.
PG, did you have any issues with the structure of the episode where we spent so much time at the end, edge of extinction at the end, getting ready for the challenge, and then ultimately a long retrospective of this season?
It was like a retrospective of like the players on edge, right?
Yeah, like basically the first, the thing that would start the finale usually, we got that at the end of this episode.
I don't mind it. I am enjoying, I guess, because these are people that we've invested so much of our attention to over the years. These are the winners. Like, I like seeing them out there. You know, I like seeing their journey out there and what all of this has come to mean to them. So I liked it. I really would have liked to have seen the challenge. Do you think it's going to be that we're not going to see the challenge at all, or they're going to show it?
I really thought we were going to get the challenge last night. I really thought like, oh, this is going to be cool. Like, I like this. Like, let us see the challenge. Let us see who's coming back, and then we'll be excited going into the finale. But it was a tease. No challenge.
Do you think we're going to see it in the next episode? Okay, so it's not like they're going to cut it.
Yeah, I don't think that somebody will just like walk back into camp like, what? Danny Boatwright, what? Like, yep, I'm back, baby.
It was a weird, it was a slightly weird way to end it. It was slightly melancholy in a way, like, and then that was, you know, and then it just kind of like slow fade to black. I don't think.
Yeah. Amber was talking about that she is going to miss the edge of extinction.
Yeah, she's like, I'm really enjoying some time on here away from my kids.
She said, like, you know, the edge of extinction is great because this, you know, life is so busy. We don't ever get a chance to just like stop and do nothing and have downtime. And the rest of us said, yeah, wait till you get to May, Amber.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like if anything, though, all of us can kind of relate to that a little bit.
Yeah.
Through the quarantine, right? Like, that's kind of how I feel. I feel a little bit like I'm back on Survivor, just in this kind of weird forced isolation. I've started kind of like wanting to hoard stuff. You know, it's this weird forced, this weird forcing you to slow down kind of thing. But in a way, it's good. Like, you know, the same way that, like, I like being on airplanes because I can spend 5 hours sitting on my ass, eating, drinking, and reading or doing puzzles, and I don't feel guilty that I just spent 5 hours doing that because there's, you know what I mean? Like,
I get that. I get that.
And I feel that same way about quarantine a little bit, where it's like, I'm going to sit and knit for 3 hours and watch TV and cuddle with my cat. And, like, I don't feel like, oh, I'm missing out on so much.
Should have been doing something else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. It makes sense to me. Okay. All right. Let's see. I got a bunch of other stuff that people want to know from you. Okay. Jessica Kelly Taylor says, can you ask PG if this season of Survivor were a D&D campaign, what class would each of the final five be? Okay. PG, does this make any sense to you? Do you know what Jessica is talking about?
Yes, of course I do.
What are the classes of D&D?
So in a classic D&D, you have the warrior. You have usually a healer. You'll have a wizard.
Mike. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll have a wizard. Coach. Or no, sorry, Fishrack, Steven.
Steven's the wizard.
Steven's the wizard. What am I thinking? And then you'll have various other, you know, those are the basic classes. You'll have like rogues, who they're kind of the sneaky ones. They do all the sneaky stuff, creep around, backstab people.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, this is like writing itself. Okay. All right, so Tony is rogue.
Is Tony rogue? Okay. So I'll start with Ben, who is like a warrior.
Yeah. Makes sense. Hero.
Ben is like a barbarian warrior, but barbarian is a specialized class of warrior that is a little bit like higher on the strength level, lower in other, like, you know, mental attributes, right. And then also occasionally has these superpowers where they go into a frenzy and then they're like,
I can see it.
Super, their strength, like, you know, it's like plus 10 to their strength. What would Sarah be?
Yeah, I think, well, I don't know all of them, so you need to tell me more. I don't think we've come across what Sarah is.
Sarah is, oh my God, I don't know. She's like an enchanter or something.
Enchanter, okay. Tell me more about the enchanter.
So the enchanter class is different for different games, but as I understand enchanters, they are usually, it's magic based, but they are specializing in some kind of mind control.
Mind control.
So, oh, like,
yeah, that sounds right.
They can cast a glamour. You look at them and suddenly, like, they're like a beautiful lady, or they're, you know what I mean? Like, oh, so yeah. You can enchant their minds. Because I feel like Sarah has been really good with this, like, manipulation and manipulating people's perceptions. Although Tony's been pretty good at that too. Yeah. So I don't, like, yeah, I don't know. Tony's like some kind of weird, like, wizard warrior combination this season. He's been killing it.
And then Denise, I think, is probably a healer.
Denise is probably a healer. She is kind of the support person for everybody. She's like the support human.
Right. What about Michelle?
Michelle is, I don't know how to say how she's been playing. Oh, you know who Sarah is, actually, probably maybe a bard.
A bard?
A bard. Bards are also kind of enchanter type classes. Yeah. They kind of, yeah. They like get everyone together. I almost want to say Michelle is a rogue just because she's kind of off doing her own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know what else. I don't know what other category to put her into.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Your listeners will know. They'll have good suggestions.
Okay. Constance says, when are you going to stream another Survivor Werewolf game on Twitch? The first one was so good. Okay. Tell me about what you're doing, PG.
So, okay, like, I'm as bad as Fishback with getting these projects off the ground.
No, that's not true. Have you done Survivor Werewolf?
I have played once, but that's because I didn't, because I wasn't the one that organized it.
All right, so tell me about it. So tell me about this. How did it work?
It was super fun. So Jillian Bem, I think from Nicaragua?
Dr. Jill.
Dr. Jill organized it, and that I had actually not met her before, but it was totally awesome. She was like, hey, I'm doing this game of Werewolf with a bunch of, like, totally random old school survivors.
Who played?
So, Marty.
Yes.
Piombo.
Yes, Marty.
Will Wall from
Will Wall. Okay.
Millennials. Brooke Struck.
Okay.
Sunday.
Sunday Berquist,
Mama C.
Mama C, yeah, baby.
And then, is it Joel from season one, from Borneo?
Joel Klug.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Taking it way back.
All right. And so how did this come up? This was just in the Survivor Facebook group, and they said, hey, who wants to play Werewolf?
Well, actually, I don't know. They had organized it because I had come into the group, and I was like, I really want to do Zoom games with a bunch of survivors. I just want to play some games online. And people were like, yeah, sign me up. And I was trying to figure out how to, like, I have to revive my Twitch account and get signups. And then Jill messaged me and she was like, hey, I've actually organized a game of Werewolf with a bunch of survivors. She was like, do you want to come play with us? You can kind of see how I've been doing it. And if you have suggestions, you know, whatever, like, come play. And I was like, yeah, I want to come play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for people that don't know, Werewolf is this kind of, like, social deduction, social engineering.
Is it the same as Mafia or it's different?
It's very similar to Mafia.
Okay.
So basically, there's one wolf, two wolves, and then there's a bunch of other roles. You're all villagers.
Yes.
So the goal of the villagers is to kill the wolves, and the wolves will, you know, kill the villagers. This is a different version that we played, but it still involves basically, like, lying. So if you're a wolf, you are going to lie. You're going to claim that you're an innocent villager.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to claim to be someone else's role. And so it's really all this weird lying, bluffing game. And let me tell you, like, Brooke and Sunday were so good, like, sweet, innocent, lying through their teeth with a smile right away, no hesitation or anything. And I was like, I never want to play Survivor with either of these broads. Like,
yeah, I know. I think it's wild to get these survivors playing because they take it so seriously too.
They're really good. So, like, I've played with other groups, and usually the other groups are kind of like, don't really know where to start. Nobody really wants to lie. They feel bad or whatever. These guys, like, out of the gate, just right away, boom, strategy full on, like, the lying, like, covering each other's tracks. You know, people have the alliances.
PG, you know who else is really into this idea? Is Shane Powers.
Really?
Yeah, he really wants to do this also.
I would love to have him come play because it's fun. It is this kind of a game of, like, verbal bantering.
Yeah.
Right. And, like, verbal back and forth. So it's a really fun thing to be able to play on Zoom. And it's a fun thing. It's like a spectator sport. Like, I actually have moderated a bunch of games since then. And it's even more fun moderating and watching, because you know who has what role.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So seeing it all play out is fun.
Yeah, I'd like to do this also. I would like to play. I gotta get through this next week of Survivor.
I will organize. I'll organize a game. You know who I actually just met.
Let me guess. Let's see. I don't have any good guesses.
So I just met Max Temkin, who is one of the creators of Cards Against Humanity.
Yes, yes.
And he also designed Secret Hitler, mm-hmm. which I think is a similar type of game like Werewolf.
Yes.
And so, you know, no surprise, there's a lot of crossover between puzzle game designers, enthusiasts, and they're all fans of Survivor. Mm-hmm. So he's a big fan of Survivor. I'm a big fan of his games. We had some mutual friends. So I organized like a Zoom call. And in talking with all of them, he was like, do you guys want to play? He's like, I designed Secret Hitler. And I was like, yes, can we come play a game with the guy that, you know, designed it? And he was thrilled to play with a bunch of survivors, because like I said, he's a hardcore fan. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to organize, get that going. You're welcome to come play with us. That would be really fun.
Yeah. I got one more crazy week. I got one more crazy week, and then I'm free indefinitely, perhaps, PG.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah.
Are you going to come play D&D with me and Steven?
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear more. I mean, you guys are on this like text chain sometimes where, you know, I'm like the worst person to be on a text chain, because then I go into like a podcast for like 3 hours and I'm sort of like people think I'm just like antisocial. But yeah, I'm up for it.
All right. I'll try to drive that. Like, actually, I feel like Steven waved the white flag a little bit, because he texted me and he was like, can you help? He was like, believe it or not, I'm still interested. And can you maybe help drive this forward a little bit? And I was like, okay, like, cause I think it would be fun. I would like to play.
Yeah. I like the improvisation. I like talking it through. I just like I find like the rolling the dice to get a little boring.
I'm the opposite, where I like all the action and I'm less about I want action. I'm less about the strategy, but the role play. But I think the role play is fun. Mm-hmm. I think it definitely adds an element. Like, you know, that's why I'm like obsessed with like escape rooms, because it's not just like straight puzzles. It's not like you're just sitting down doing math problems. You're doing these things that are themed to mm-hmm. this created immersive world.
Yeah. Okay. Look, my summer is wide open, PG.
I've been getting more and more sucked into this whole community of like gaming, puzzling. Like, I started doing I'll plug the website that I just started doing reviews for. So
yeah,
it's called Room Escape Artist. They're huge Survivor fans. Yes. Also,
and what are you reviewing?
I'm reviewing online escape rooms, since all these escape rooms have had to close during this whole, you know, quarantine period. Yes. A lot of them are converting to some type of like virtual version of their room, whether it's playing via an avatar, like maybe the owner will wear like a GoPro and he's like your hand.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
So that's kind of fun. Like, I've played some of those and there's difficulties with that, but it is really fun controlling another human being. There's puzzle hunts and all kinds of different things. So I'm getting more into the world of like, you know, like reviewing those things and just being involved in that community. So that's been a blast.
Okay. This is a question from John wants to know, are there any games you've been playing during quarantine?
Oh, that's good tie-in. Yes. So I have been playing all of these online puzzle games. So you can also read my reviews at roomescapeartists.com. They're under the Hive
Artists. Now, and you do like, you type them out? It's like a blog?
It's like a little blog, and it's a little blurb. There are these things called, they call them the Hive Mind Reviewers, because they have asked, like, there'll be like maybe like three to five of us that will all review the same game, and that way you can see different people's like subjective reactions to it. Mm. But I've also been playing a ton of games almost every night on Zoom with like my escape room buddies. So we play games like Codenames.
Yeah.
A game called Decrypto, which is similar to Codenames. That's really fun.
Yeah.
A game called Spyfall. That one is
sounds so fun, awesome. PG.
Well, I always want to invite you, and then I always feel like you're too busy to play. Should I just? I'll just.
It's work, but then it's also like you know, I'm playing Jenga with my kids. Like I'm playing like not super fun games. With all due respect to Jenga. I'm playing Wildcrats.
There's like code. There's Disney code names. I play that with like my 6-year old niece.
Oh,
and that one's kind of fun. Yeah. Spyfall is a really fun game. I like all these social deduction games where they're like, so Spyfall, the way Spyfall works is there is a location, like there's a list of locations, but for example, at each location, there's roles given out to everybody. So if it's a restaurant, you could be a waitress, a chef, a diner, etc., right? A couple of people aren't given any of this information. They're the spy. And so you just ask each other questions and I'll be like, hey, Rob, how do people dress when they come here? And if you're like, or how do you dress? And if you're a waiter, you'd be like, oh, well, I wear a tuxedo or I wear a suit, mm-hmm. whatever,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So you answer according to your role. So our job is to figure out who the spy is. The spy's job is to figure out where you guys are. So I really like these games where it's like, you have to give out enough information so people know you are not the spy, mm-hmm. that you're in on the location, but without giving up too much information of, so that they can deduce where we are. So I feel like there's a real art to that type of gameplay. And to me, again, there's a lot of that in Survivor where it's like, you have to give out enough information to let people know where you stand in an alliance or whatever, but not, you know, but not so much mm-hmm. that you're giving everything away.
Yeah.
So games like that are fun.
I think I would like that.
It's fun. We do a bunch of Jackbox games. There's similar games like that, like on Jackbox and stuff.
Yeah.
I have a game for us to play also.
Oh, that's so great. That Lauren Pratt said, did PG make up a game for you to play on the podcast?
I did, sir.
Oh, wow. This is great. What a treat. What a treat, PG.
So this is the same game that we have played before, which mm-hmm. is kind of a cross between like Heads Up and the game Celebrity.
Okay.
So how it works is I have a bunch of phrases, moments, things, whatever, you know, from last night's episode.
Yes.
Some are callbacks from previous episodes that I think are like really funny.
Okay.
Yes.
So what do I
from
do?
This so basically, we'll take turns, and what I will do, since I wrote them and I know what they are, I am going to, the first round will be me giving you a description.
Okay.
Full description. You just have to guess what I'm referring to.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you need to avert my eyes or anything?
Maybe that'll be fun because I think it'll be fun if I can show people what it is.
Should I put a buff on and then be blindfolded or just...
Well, whatever will be less disorienting for you. You don't have to. I can trust whatever. And then the second... So Rob, the way this will go is after we've gone through the stack, the second round, I will hold up the cards so that you can see them. And then... Now that you know what they are, I know what they are. Round two, you are going to have to, I am going to guess. You are going to give the clues,
okay.
But you can only use one word.
One word. Okay.
Okay.
All right. I don't have a buff nearby, so I could either, I just won't look at the screen.
That's fine. So we'll see how closely you paid attention to the episodes. So even these are very specific.
We'll see. All right.
Okay, you ready? You ready to go?
Ready.
Okay. I hope this is showing up for the viewers. I might have to turn off my background, and it is also reversed. But okay, so this is basically, Michelle said this at the final tribal after she won immunity.
No clap? No clapping?
This was at the final tribal when Jeff asks her how much she needed the immunity necklace.
More than Jeff needs a blue shirt and khakis?
Yes. Ding. Ding, ding. I need this win like you need a blue button down and khakis.
Yeah. Okay. Close enough.
Okay. This is the evolution of where Tony goes to see what
Inez.
People are talking about. Yes. This is the in-game currency.
Fire token.
Ding, ding. Okay. This is a random quote from quite a while back from someone who's on Edge. I think it's really funny. It's basically someone talking about coming back into the game. And this is a quote from Parvati. And basically, this is what happens to my stomach after I've eaten too much Taco Bell. She's talking about how much more game she has to play.
I don't know.
There's more game bubbling under the surface.
There's more game bubbling under the surface was the quote?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that was very specific.
I think it was just really funny. Okay. This is what Adam Klein wanted to play.
Florida Lee.
Okay. Well, I have it down as the immunity podium.
Yes.
This is also very specific, but basically, this is what the players had to do at the challenge when they had to throw something onto a structure and then carry these things through the challenge, dig under the sand, and then carry these items.
A buoy? A basketball?
It was in the last challenge. Forcing players to carry a large pair of balls through a challenge.
Oh, that's what, is that what Jeff said?
No, that's just what I said. Forcing players to carry a large pair of balls through a challenge. Okay.
Right. So sometimes I'm trying to guess your quotes.
I know. I'm sorry. Okay. This is what Tony thinks constitutes. This is Tony's version of a Survivor calendar.
Oh, 8 days? 5 days?
Nine days equals 2 weeks.
Yeah.
This is if this popular player, if Boston Rob was your babysitter, he would put you in a...
playpen.
Yeah. Okay. When you're... Oh,
what happened?
My
turning the camera off?
No, I don't. Did I turn the... Oh, I did accidentally. Oh, okay. I must have just hit a button. Okay. When you are out on Survivor and you don't have a toilet, instead you have this.
Ocean.
Well, but also it is... You don't have the porcelain throne. You have...
stone throne? I don't think they go to the bathroom on the stone throne.
Throne of stone. I know, but I just feel like it's a funny term. We'll leave that one out since I did miswrite it. It was the throne of stone. Okay. This is what Denise tattooed on her wrist.
Endure and let go.
There you go.
Let's go.
Tony and Sarah are known as...
Cops Are Us.
And if you are not somebody's ex-boyfriend, rather you just did this.
Kicked it.
Yep.
Yeah, there's some phrases from this season. Maybe this was the greatest season of all time.
There are some good quotes. Okay. Ben said that this is who he couldn't trust after he came back from Survivor.
His wife, Sweet Kelly. Jeff was ready to, he's like, oh yes, your wife that you said saved your life, right?
You couldn't trust her. This is who Michelle couldn't trust after she came back from Survivor.
Was it the person that told her to go to how to get to the bar? Did you tweet that you said that was also you?
I retweeted somebody else. So somebody had a tweet that was like, Ben, I couldn't trust my wife. And Jeremy was like, I couldn't trust my firefighters. Mm-hmm. Michelle's like, I couldn't trust these directions to the bar.
Did you have that, PG? Did you have that you couldn't trust somebody who was close to you?
No. Did you?
No. I mean, that was not a phenomenon for me. But I played, you know, so long ago, maybe like there wasn't as much lying going on at that time. But even after the All-Stars, I didn't, and everybody lied to me the whole time. You know, that was, or at least the couple days that I was there, everybody lied to me. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's, I don't know. I didn't have that issue. Like, you know that it's the game. When you get out of the game, everything's back to normal. You go to Ponderosa, you chat, you tell each other, oh, this is what I was really doing. Like, it's...
I mean, I think I'm really the an exception to the rule where, like, you know, and maybe it's because I was, you know, so young that I basically, I played 38 days in the Amazon. I went to the final tribal council. I came home 2 days later and I was at work on Monday. And people are like, what happened to you? What is wrong with you? Why do you I got a stomach virus. Like, you look like hell. Like,
yeah,
out of work for 6 weeks.
I was fine when I came off of China, even. You know, you're supposed to talk to the psychologist, and Dr. Eliza came up to me. She was like, do you need to chat? She was like, you seem like you're fine. And I was like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
She was like, okay. Like,
yeah. They can tell the people that are not fine and they spend all their time on them. Like, yeah, you seem fine. You're fine.
I don't know if it's maybe because I've played so many of these types of games that it's, I get that it's not personal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also helped that I was never voted out. You know what it is too? I was never voted out by someone that I deeply trusted.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably what goes a long way towards.
Maybe that's it.
Towards that thing. You know, I mean, I feel lucky in that regards. So
these people won.
That's true. That's true. If anything, you were probably the one. Backstabbing and betraying.
Yeah, so I don't know. I didn't have that. Whatever they're talking about, I can't relate to that.
Well, Jeremy had been voted out once before.
Jeremy did get voted out.
That's fair for him.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, we'll try to get through a few of these. Okay. Here, I'm going to just hold this up. Is that mirrored?
Yeah. I'm good. I can see it.
It doesn't matter?
It's fine for me.
Okay. I can see. So what I'm going to do is I am going to I'm going to turn off my camera.
But then I can't.
That way I don't. Oh, that's true. okay. I will just try to.
Just don't look at the camera.
I will look at the screen. Yeah. Okay.
All right. All right. PG. But the problem is your virtual background is okay.
Oh,
all right.
Wait, Rob. I'm going to turn it off. Sorry. Everyone's going to see my messy ass room.
Okay. That's fine. All right.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. Okay. It's upside down. Does it matter if these are ones that we've already done?
No, that's the whole point. So you can only give me a one word. Yeah.
One word. Okay. Police.
Cops are us.
Currency.
Fire token.
Okay, if you could turn it over, that would help. One word for this.
You can also
tavern.
Pass. Oh, I couldn't trust getting directions to the bar.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me know if you need me to put this.
Is Florida Lee one word?
No, but immunity podium.
Yeah. Okay. You can turn it over with this. Okay. Parvati.
There's more game bubbling under the surface.
Yes. Okay. And calendar.
9 days equals 2 weeks.
PG.
What? Oh, man. Is this the balls?
Yes. The quote that you made up.
Yeah. Players having to carry two large balls, a pair of balls, through a challenge.
Okay. Wendell.
Kicking it.
Yes.
Bird.
Spy Nest.
Yes. And Wardrobe.
Wardrobe. Shit, I wrote these cards and I forgot. Wardrobe. Oh my God, why can't I remember?
It had to do with somebody's wardrobe.
Ah, oh, shit. Give me another hint.
Jeff.
Oh, yes. I need this win like Jeff needs a blue shirt and khakis.
That's right.
I can't believe I forgot that. Oh, man.
All right. And then spouse.
Oh, Ben can't trust his wife.
Yes.
There's only two more. We're almost.
Okay. Babysit.
Boston Rob's playpen.
Yes, yes. And tattoo.
Oh, let go and endure.
Yes, yes, you got it. Well done.
Very good.
Thank you for making up a game. I don't know how that played on a podcast, but I appreciate the effort there. It was great. Nobody else does that. Nobody else comes in with a game on the podcast.
Oh, it's guessing. Gets. I always like listening to games on podcasts, yes. So we'll try.
Okay. PG, where can people keep track of what you're doing? Of course, you've the best Twitter handle in the business, at PG.
Very easy.
Yeah.
PEIHGEE.
Yeah.
You can follow, I have like an art account, which is PG Paints.
Yes, I have your cactus hung up here. Just
oh, awesome.
Studio. Yes.
Awesome. Love that. I have to like write this down because it's so long. My business account is Low Raider Jewelry. It's LORADOR. Mm-hmm. JEWELRY. And it's also lowraiderjewelry.com. That's the website. That's mm-hmm. the app. Besides that, like I said, I've been doing reviews for the escape rooms and puzzle games. That's at roomescapeartist.com.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody looking for fun things to occupy themselves with during quarantine, stuck at home, stay at home, you guys can go check that out and see my recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. PG, are you watching anything fun?
I just started watching Ozark.
Ozark, season one.
Season one. I'm on to season two now.
Yes.
Have you not seen it?
No.
Did you watch Breaking Bad?
Yes.
It's very similar to Breaking Bad.
Okay.
It is
Breaking Bad.
It's the Breaking Bad of money laundering.
Okay.
Very similar. There's these amazing female characters in it.
Okay.
That's really what I like about it, because I kind of hated the female characters that they had in Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in this season, there's a ton of just like really empowered women, crazy as hell, but like really empowered. And they really drive that. They do help drive a lot of the narrative forward too. And it's drama and
PG, when we have our Survivor finale next Wednesday, do you think that Jeff Probst should host any of your games that you have created for the Survivor contestants to play?
Oh man, that I would love to watch.
Should
Jeff
play Werewolf
play?
With the last 10 minutes?
That would be amazing. I would love that.
Who would be the best?
Who's the best liar? Who's the best at spinning story? I feel like Tony. Sarah's really good. Very subtle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of feel like the werewolf would throw Tony off.
There is an inherent type of logic to it, too. So somebody who's really, I think, strategy oriented would do really well. You know what I'm bummed about is, like, I know we're going to have like a big Zoom finale, which is going to be fun. But I'm bummed that there's not going to be like parties.
Yeah. Should we have a Zoom finale party where everybody that was going to go to the party just gets on one Zoom call?
I was kind of thinking about that, like at least to be able to watch it together or like hang out. I don't know how that would work, but it is bumming me out that we don't have that for this season.
Would have been wild.
The season of all seasons. Everyone's going to fly in for it.
I know.
Yeah.
Survivor. Well, they got to do Survivor 50 now.
That's true.
I feel like we never talk about this with you, but would you play again?
I mean, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Like,
why not? Right?
You would.
I go back and forth. I think it would be fun to go do it. Like, the idea of going to do it would be fun. But then when I'm getting voted out on like day six, that would not be fun, and I would regret it, and I would be bitter, and I would be sad.
I wouldn't regret it, but I also, there's a part of me that feels like, have I lost my edge? Because I watched the way this gameplay goes, and I realize I'm old school. I have these kind of old school ideas of how I would like Survivor to be played. I don't like this chaos. I don't like changing alliances so easily.
What I don't care for especially is the part where, you know, I like the part where, like, oh, they take my picture and then the cast comes out and everybody says I'm gonna do good, but then what I don't like is the part where then I actually do bad and then everybody then talks about how, like, oh, I guess like he's not as smart as he thinks he is. I guess he's a big stupid idiot. And so that's the part I don't like, where everybody votes me out.
You don't like the part where everyone calls you a stupid idiot? That's the best part.
No, I don't like that part. So I haven't really cracked the scenario where I think I do well and then it's fun.
Yeah. I realized, like, I don't even, when I went back, sometimes I feel like I don't know that I like being in the position of power, or like, it's like too many options. I like playing. I think we talked about this. I like playing almost, I prefer playing as an underdog, even though it sucks. Because it's fun knowing that you don't have any choices. So you're going to do the wild shit. And those are a lot of times these big moves. And, you know, I don't think that people that are safe or in positions of power get enough credit when they do a big move, because it's scary. Mm-hmm. If you're already doing well, it's a scary thing to rock the boat. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, because you don't know how that's going to turn out. Whereas when you're underdog, you got nothing to lose. I'll aim for a Tony, because I'm on my way out anyway. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, PG, thank you for spending so much time with me this afternoon. This was so nice.
A pleasure, as usual. It's always fun.
Yes. And the next time we do this, like, I want to see you back in person.
In the studio.
Yes.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be soon.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. When do you think Survivor is going to be back on the air?
On the air, or when they're going to...
No, when do you think the next season of Survivor will be airing what month?
Oh, God. I have no idea about schedules. It's supposed to be... Let me see here. We're in the May. So the next one should be starting...
Start September. September 2020 would be when traditionally Survivor 41 would have started.
They've already finished filming 41, right?
No, they didn't film it.
Oh, okay, I don't know why I thought that 42 is the one that they had to cut.
No, they were going to film 41 and they canceled it, and they said, okay, well, we'll film it in May, but they didn't film it in May.
Did it even start and they had to recall people?
No, started and they stopped it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So 40 is the last season that's been filmed.
Yeah.
Wow. That must suck for the people that are already cast.
They were cast. They were ready to go. And then they told them not to go. They might be watching this podcast.
Actually, in a way, isn't that good? Because they have extra time to prepare.
Yes. And then they get to see. I think that for the overall, for the franchise, in terms of watching how the fire tokens played out and stuff like that, people can come in to a new season and see, like, oh, okay, I know what I'm going to do with fire tokens. So I do think that fire tokens, if they come back, and which I think they're going to, can make a leap into the next season.
Yeah. So I heard a little tidbit about the fire tokens. Yeah. And when this idea first got kind of brought up, somebody, I don't want to like, I don't know how that secret this is supposed to be. I don't think it's a big secret, but
it might be a mutual friend of ours.
Thing.
Yeah.
Or maybe no.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
But anyway, like they said that they ran simulations of how all the different scenarios that could be affected by fire tokens and all the different things, like thousands and thousands of them, like a real nerdy kind of thing to do. And that was part of a, like part of a kind of a present, not a presentation, but like someone had been like, look, Jeff, I ran all these simulations and all these different permutations of scenarios of how a currency could affect the game, you know? Yeah, and so yeah. I think the production did take those kinds of things into account before they decided to do this. I'd also heard that they were keeping track, you know, there's obviously somebody in production that keeps track of how the fire tokens change hands, who has what.
Yes.
And it was something like, I don't know, like an 80 page document. Like, so wow. I feel like there may be more interactions with these that maybe we don't even see.
Yeah. Makes sense. All right, we'll see. We'll see what happens in the future with the fire tokens.
Well, I'm interested to see how they work in a game where it's not being affected by people from an edge of extinction.
Yes, yeah. I think it will be fine. I don't think you need the edge of extinction.
Yeah. Sorry to get on a tangent. And you're trying to get off on, like, I just found that whole, like,
no, I mean, I think that the future of fire tokens is bright. Tell me what you think about this. That I was talking with Steven about this last night. That should the fire tokens, accumulating fire tokens at the end of the game help you win? Should that matter? Whereas, you know, if you came into the final five now and I have 8 fire tokens, shouldn't that be something that is going to give you a better chance to win?
If not,
what was the point?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you should be able to, you know, it sucked that people are really, the players in the game can only use the game tokens if they're offered the opportunity by someone at Edge.
Yeah.
So there have to be this whole confluence of events in order for you to benefit from your accumulated fire tokens. So someone that you are aligned with has to be the one to get that advantage out there on the edge, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to have an alliance on the edge. That alliance member has, or that friend has to be the one to get the advantage in the first place. They have to then pick you to be the one to receive this. And on top of that, you have to have had enough tokens. It is, you know, it's
wild.
It's wild. And a lot of it is kind of based on luck. So I feel like if someone's worked so hard to get these tokens and they don't ever get offered the opportunity to spend them, it's kind of tough.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see. We'll see what the future holds for the fire tokens. All right. Yeah. PG, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It was so good chatting with you, Rob.
Okay. All right. And hopefully we'll get to do it again soon.
Yep. Everybody stay safe out there.
All right, everybody, there you have it. PG Law here on the podcast. Great to catch up with PG. Hope we can do some fun stuff, playing some games with PG sometime soon. I am very excited about the weekend of podcasts still to come as well, because we are going to catch up with Chris Underwood over the weekend. And then also, I've got my feedback show with Mike Bloom. Get your feedback questions in. That should be a good one with Mike Bloom. Plus Akiva Winokur on This Week in Survivor History, plus also a brand new episode of Robin Akiva Need a Podcast, and also a Wiggle Room. What? We're going to get it all in somehow over the weekend. I already got in the Facebook Friday, did it on Thursday here today to try to make it all work, because Nicole is working over these next 24 hours, which sort of screws up the podcasting schedule. So going to be a little bit of a challenge to fit it all in, but we're going to get to all it. Also a patron 5 for 5 coming up tonight as well. So lots of recording going on. Also, a very happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there this weekend as well. Of course, so much going on in our patron world. If you want to be a part of our Rob is a Podcast patron community here, as we are trying to process everything here at the end of this Survivor season, we are still going to be raising money for directrelief.org. I mentioned on the podcast last night with Stephen that over $21,000 has been raised between our GoFundMe and then also all of our patron contributions since the beginning of April, our new patron contributions from the beginning of April, that those have been donated with a matching contribution from myself totaling over $21,000. If you would like to take me up on that offer to have your new patron pledge donated to directrelief.org with a matching contribution from myself, we're going to do that all the way through the finale, so there's still time if you want to jump on that. Not to mention we've got a great patron community and a ton of patron content coming your way, all at robiswebsite.com/patron. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.